second. Yeah, I'm coming. Hold on. Ron, what are you doing here?
There's something I need to tell you. Are we alone? Quick, grab anything you can. We gotta go. Is there a back door? They're coming. They're coming. Oh God, they're here. Go. Damn this wicked planet.
All right, so when you're talking about New Hampshire, New Hampshire is best known for politics up here in New England. First in the nation primary coming up. I have as a guest somebody that I've talked to several times before, been on the Wicked Planet. And I just really was excited to get you back into the studio. So I want to welcome Therese Bastarash, formerly known as Therese Grinnell.
Thank you for having me, Ron.
A mover and shaker in New Hampshire politics from the grassroots standpoint. And that's why I really enjoy conversations with you. And I want to thank you for finding the time to come up and go over a few things. Because I think it's important to know is, you know, this isn't going to be a conversation just about New Hampshire politics. So, which we know is like a full contact sport in New Hampshire, right? Like big time. But to kind of let listeners know, you know, wherever you are in the United States, Canada, or even Australia, we have a lot of listeners there, that you can be just a regular Joe off the street and make things happen. When you see what's going on and you know it's not right and you know that funkiness is going on, you can step up, you can make your voice heard, and you can actually get some action going. And you are a perfect example of that person. And I'm hoping that this kind of helps inspire people around the country, because I think you would have to be Helen Keller to not know that there is a lot of shenanigans going on, a lot of sketchy stuff going on, laws being made up as we go, just like the latest thing with Trump. We can get into that. Now, this is not going to be a, you know, bash on any one particular politician, but we'll definitely make our thoughts known, you know, as being, you know, because I admittedly, I am a Trump supporter. I have never backed away from that, no matter what any of my friends say or any other podcasters say. I have very good friends in the podcasting community that just give me a hard time for being a Trump supporter, but they understand where I'm coming from. You know, I am old school, right? I am from the old school, and I do not like, well, I've never really liked what any Democrat has done when they're in the White House. You know, I did, believe it or not, vote for Barack Obama one time in his second term. I did vote for George Bush both times. Ronald Reagan was the first president I ever voted for. So I've been voting for a few years. But Biden is, in my view, just running the country into the ground. And I think there's a clear agenda there, like, for sure. So Therese, let's... something I wanted to bring up, and I don't know if you're okay talking about it, but I think the listeners would enjoy this story. Tell us a little bit about, you know, kind of where you came from and your conservative roots through your dad, and what brought you to where you are right now, because it's a really cool story. And again, you know, whether you're a fan of the governor of New Hampshire or not, I mean, for full disclosure, I've voted for him every time he's run. But as you get older and a little bit more educated and start seeing things for what they really are, and then, of course, since COVID has hit, everybody's been glued to their screens. They got a lot of research time, and you're starting to look into some connections. And then the whole quote-unquote deep state term comes up, globalist term comes up, yeah. World Economic Forum, who's, you know, yeah. tied in with the United Nations, who is tied in with the WHO. In all of these organizations, they're not working for the general public, right? Yeah. So tell us, give us a little background, and then I want to get into the little thing that happened to you during a New Hampshire Executive Council meeting.
Sure. So my name's Therese Bastarash, and I was actually born and raised in Southern California. My parents ended up adopting my younger siblings. So at a very early age, I remember looking at my mom and saying, I want to be Bonnie. And Bonnie was one of my brother's caseworkers. And my mom was a nurse, and she says, no, you don't want to be a caseworker. If anything, grow up and be a nurse. At the same time, my parents owned a business. My dad was a mechanic, and I remember listening to Rush Limbaugh every time I was in my dad's car. And my dad very much instilling in me the whole idea of economics and, you know, if we don't make money, then, you know, we can't provide for people. Jobs and everything else. Went off to college actually at Azusa Pacific University, which was right where the Rodney King riots happened in East LA. And I remember just everything going crazy within like 2 seconds, it felt like. Like within 24 hours, complete mayhem.
Now, are you talking about the South Central riots? Mm-hmm. Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, so I was right there in the thick of that when that happened. And I was, you know, 17 or 18 at the time. So, you know, that is a memory for me as well. And then I moved east, and I always knew I wanted to be a foster mom. I knew that I wanted to, you know, help these children. I knew the system was very, very broken when it came to DCYF. I defaulted into finance, and I went through my whole financial career, was a director for Washington Mutual, one of the youngest, overseeing a $6 billion portfolio, had 5 teams under me, so corporate America was my thing, and then 9/11 happened. And I remember I grew up in a Christian family, but I had walked away from it, and I was pregnant, 3 months pregnant when 9/11 happened. And I remember getting a flyer for the Midnight Madness sale at the local Bible bookstore. And I was like, I'm going to go back and get some music. And I was there, and I'll never forget. There's this beautiful black woman, and she just looked at me, and she says, where do you go to church? And I said, I don't. She's like, well, you're coming with me Sunday. And I went with her, and her name was Joyce. So I'll never forget Joyce. But I rededicated my life back at that point to my faith. And I said, God, here I am, use me. And it was like the next week we got the notice that they were shutting down the New Hampshire site and they were moving everything to Arlington, Texas and overseas. And I was like, oh.
I remember when that happened, actually.
Do you?
Yeah, because they had the big office down there in Concord, right? Yeah. Right off the highway.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was, you know, where I worked, and they gave me what I call golden handcuffs to stay until lights were out. They gave me an opportunity to move to Texas. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to stay here with my daughter. And I said, well, if I go back to school, I had a year before the lights were going to go out, what do I really want to be when I grow up? And I decided if I went back to become a nurse, they could never outsource that to India. And I was kind of burnt out with the project management piece. And I'll never forget going to my boss saying, I'm going back to school to become an RN. And he said, why would you want to do that? You could kill people. You have a great career in finance. And I said, I just really feel led to go this direction. And so I was 32 when I went back to school to become an RN. I've now been a nurse for about 13 years. You know, through that time, went through divorce. But, you know, it was probably about 3 years before COVID happened that I started a ministry for children that were in state care, national organization. I had the New Hampshire chapter. And so I was really focused on encouraging people to get licensed and to get these kids out of group homes, connecting with, if you can't foster and adopt, maybe you can get a pair of soccer cleats, that kind of thing. So I was very involved in the church, very involved in that. Plus, I was a nurse and a mom, and I have horses and a very full life going on. So I wasn't into politics at all. I believe I only showed up at the general election, and I believe I just simply went down ballot Republican. And it wasn't that I didn't care about my country. It just, my life was in other places. And then COVID hit. And I was working at the time in home care, I believe. I might be off a little bit with that. But I remember another peer of mine, Concord, New Hampshire is very small. You have kind of all the healthcare community all in like one area.
Sure.
Downtown. And, you know, I'd been at Concord Hospital. I'd been at Concord Regional VNA. So, you know, a lot of us, our paths have crossed over a decade of nursing. And we were all facing the exemptions and the mandates and potentially losing our job. And I remember one of my good friends, she'd been 20-plus years at Concord Hospital. Her husband just happened to be out. He owned a logging business, was out getting chemotherapy for ocular cancer in his eye. She had, her daughter was in the same grade as one of the boys that I've adopted. And she was having to pay for him, for her daughter to be in childcare all day because we still had to work. So a mortgage payment to pay for childcare because the school shut down. Husband's on her health insurance. She covers the health insurance because they own a business. And she's like, we're about to lose the business, his health insurance. I can't pay my mortgage. And now I'm told if I don't get this injection in my arm, I'm going to lose my pension and my 20 years on the job. Mm. And they just denied my exemption. And I've already had COVID. And she just fell apart in my arms. And I thought, oh my gosh, my employer's not doing the mandate yet. But how is this happening to everyone that has been in the thick of this virus and they don't feel comfortable yet with this that came to market at warp speed,
yeah,
which we can talk about because I'm supporting Trump too, but I know that's a big issue for a lot of people.
That was always been one of my issues with him too. And I mean, anybody can go back and listen to any of my past episodes. Like I said that multiple times. Like, you know, I wasn't a fan of warp speed because I was thinking to myself, I mean, and I'm not like a medical person whatsoever, but, you know, got a fair amount of common sense. And I'm like, okay, so the supposedly that, you know, Therese, remember they were calling it the novel coronavirus, and novel means new.
Right.
So if this is a new virus that's, you know, sprang up on the world, you know, allegedly out of China. How would it be possible to have a vaccine that was ready to rock and roll in a matter of 60 days, 90 days, right? So I definitely had an issue on that. I mean, again, like they always say, hindsight is 20/20, and looking back, you know, and I'm not defending Trump on this, like, at all, because, you know, he is a salesman. He's a salesman, and he was selling this vaccine to the public, right? But you know, when it come right down to it, I mean, I think, again, not defending his decisions, but I'm thinking he was getting probably a lot of push from the medical world, the pharmaceutical industrial complex, through Fauci, through Bricks, Bricks has admitted now that she was misrepresenting.
Yes.
What was supposed to be going on. And the other thing too, you know, thankfully I've always been self-employed, so I wasn't going to do any of that. And I definitely wasn't going to have anybody that hangs out at the shop here do that either. I've always had a very robust immune system. And I think if you have that, there's really no sense in trying to alter that. It's doing its job. But what was interesting about it, it's just the language that they use. They called it a mandate, which is not a law. So it was up to these individual companies whether or not they were going to, quote unquote, mandate it. But then they treated it like a law because they were able to put in their stipulations, well, if you this, this, and this, well, then you have to have it, or you're going to be gone. And I mean, and with a lot of people faced with a decision like that in a very short amount of time, to where they have to make that decision, where there is no data, where they can actually research it to themselves and see if it was safe and effective, which they're still saying to this day, right? That could create a lot of stress for people. Mm-hmm. And like you say, when you're faced with losing, let's just say, everything you own, I mean, a report just came out the other day, even people making $100,000 a year are living paycheck to paycheck, right? So, I mean, these are decisions you don't take lightly. So a lot of people just bowed to it and said, you know what, I'm just going to go get it.
Stress.
Yeah. I'm going to go get it, and everything is going to be fine. So,
you know, my theory, I know we're kind of going off track here a little bit, but
that's no, okay. There's no such thing
my,
here.
My theory with the Trump situation in hindsight is that if we had not rushed something to market under the emergency use, they would have kept us in lockdown, which is really what they wanted. If we looked at what was going on in Australia at the time, I truly believe they wanted to absolutely destroy all of the small business. They had a huge success with that effort. A lot of people caved and their businesses went under. But could you imagine if we had been in lockdown for another 6 months or another year? Oh my God, how yeah. many businesses would have, and we would have been then trapped in socialism and dependent on the government for all of our commodities, which is really, I think, by design what they wanted. So to me, the more I journey down this path, I realize how complex of a chess game it is. And I truly believe he trusted people that weren't trustworthy. But I also believe he had to look at, we're being backed into a corner. I can bring this to market quickly under emergency use, which technically shouldn't be mandated because it's not FDA yet approved. Or I can keep us all in lockdown and see every single part of our economy completely obliterated. And he chose one over the other.
Sure, yeah.
Which, in if that's truly what he was faced with, even as a nurse who stood up and risked my entire existence, really, when you get to know my story, over this mandate and this injection, I still think he probably made the right decision. Am I just rationalizing it because I support Trump? Maybe. But in hindsight, you know, he never mandated it. It wasn't until later on that Biden. Now, did they get kickbacks at the hospital? And did they say they're not going to get their Medicare reimbursement unless a certain percentage of their employees were injected? Yes. So there was the twisting of the arm, as I'm finding now, with everything that has to do with this agenda, where people are being beholden or, you know, ratcheted to go and do things that they never intended to be put in a position to do. And I think that's from the very bottom all the way up is what I'm seeing from local politics all the way right up to D.C. And globally. You mentioned the World Economic Forum. I went out to pull down Agenda 2030 for someone, the Great Reset, because right there it said we're going to use a global pandemic to rewrite global policy with China as the role model. It was right there in black and white. Now you go to look up the Great Reset, Charles Schwab book, you can't find it anymore.
I have it.
Now there's a sequel that they've created that I want to get my hands on. But I'm like, how interesting is this? That they know that we're on to them. It's almost, I've told people, it's like opening the refrigerator and saying, where's the ketchup? And the ketchup is right there on the top shelf in the middle. Like, they don't even hide that they feel that they need to depopulate. They look at us like a farm. Right. And the interesting thing is, if I went back to my nursing career, one of my nursing instructors had me watch, or had us all watch, The Caring Corrupted. And it was about the nurses during the Third Reich and how they had to make beds for those that were injured in war and how they put the babies out to freeze to death and they moved the mentally disabled to perish and how they were taking orders from the doctors. And after the movie, she said, I want you guys to watch this because you're likely to see this again in your lifetime. I need you to understand that the baby boomers, this huge population, are going to hit our healthcare system.
At the same time.
At the same time. Yeah. So our nursing homes, $30,000 a month, and you're going to have a huge block of nurses also retire at the same time, and you're going to have this huge crunch on healthcare. And I don't see how the numbers are ever going to work themselves out. I don't know why she had the foresight to say that, and I don't know why I was actually paying attention at that moment during lecture, because I was also working full-time as a single mom, but it stuck with me. And so when the pandemic hit, I was like, we have this huge population who's $30,000 a month, and they're not bringing anything into the tax bucket, right? They're not working. They're not wage earners. And they're just pulling off the system. It would make sense from a business perspective, this is going back to my corporate America days, to eliminate that. Right?
Yeah.
So if you're looking at things from a bigger, higher picture, and you're removed, and you have this huge population that's causing your Social Security and all your numbers to go bad, what are you going to do for a solution? And so all of it, all the pieces started to come together for me in my head with what was going on. And for the listeners, so, you know, I walk away from my friend who falls apart in my arms, and I decide, you know, Lord, what can I do? And I heard him say, go stand on the corner. So there's this one intersection in Concord where you have four hospitals all on each corner, and it's a major intersection. And so I went out there with a poster board that said, honk if you're against mandating emergency use authorization. And it was 98 degrees out that day. And I told my new husband, I'm going to go do this. And I remember the first car that went by, the window was down, and she called out by my name, Therese, you're a nurse. You should be ashamed of yourself. And I thought, Lord, why? Why are you having me stand all by myself in the middle of town with all of my peers to see me? And if you don't know me, I have bright red hair. So, you know, I stick out like a sore thumb all my life.
You're very recognizable, for sure.
Which, you know, all my life I'm used to people, where'd you get your red hair and kind of, but, you know, here I am. And I just closed my eyes and I prayed, like, am I really supposed to be doing this? And I heard a honk. And then I heard another honk. And then I opened my eyes and someone was going across the crosswalk to come stand with me. And at the end of that day, we had 17 of us standing. And I'll never forget, because at the very end, we were wrapping up. There was a little, like, incline behind the little brick patio on that corner. And this woman in her business suit, like, climbed up and she waved me over. She goes, you see up there on the fifth floor, those windows, that's where the executives at Concord Hospital meet every Wednesday. And they heard the honks and they looked out and they saw you, and they were trying to decide and discern when the mandate date was going to be for the employees. And they recognized that this is going to be hard to pull off because they're already short-staffed and they can't afford to lose more nurses. It just says they would kill me and fire me if they knew I was talking to you right now. But please don't let this be a once and done. Keep standing. And I drove away, and I felt like the Lord was saying, I needed you there. I needed you there on that day for that reason and that purpose.
Yeah.
So from there, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 12 to 2 during lunch hour, I would go stand, and I invited others to come stand with me. And I'm like, Lord, I have nothing. I was working nights at the time, so I could afford to go and do this. And he's like, yes, you do. Everyone's addicted to their phones. Everyone's addicted to social media. Use what you've got, kid. You know marketing. You know how to bring people together. You know, so I started just basically using social media as a means to say, we have to link arms for liberty. We have to link arms for our children. We have to get this done. And that was in October. Or no, I'm trying to remember the timeline now. Anyways, one thing led to another. Other liberty groups in New Hampshire caught wind of me and started to show up. And then there was a call to action to go to an executive council meeting. And I didn't know what the executive council was. I didn't know what the call to action really was. I remember working that night and my phone blowing up. People saying, Therese, you've got to get down here. They're not letting us in.
Explain to the listeners who might not know what an executive council is, because that's part, that's a branch of our government in New Hampshire, is the executive council.
Correct. So New Hampshire is very unique. Instead of having a lieutenant governor, we have executive council, which is five individuals. They make up 20% of the state voting bloc. They're elected, and they are to be the gatekeepers for the constituents and the voice of the people. And they appoint all the judges. They appoint any position that's an appointed position. And they also decision a $6 billion state budget and the contracts for all the money that goes through our state government. So every 2 weeks they meet and they rubber stamp $500 million of our tax money. And I've come to find out most of that is going to out-of-state contractors and never actually gets to the disenfranchised. They oversee the budget for DHHS and DCYF, so back to the beginning in the broken DCYF system. They oversee the court, family court judges' appointments. They're really the key to the castle. They have more power, the five of them, than our governor.
Yeah, that's the one thing I wanted to bring up, is actually the executive council actually does yield, wield more power than the governor
does
in the United States. And just for clarification for some listeners, when we say DCYF here, it would be possibly in your state what you would call CPS, yes. Child Protective Services. Here it's called DCYF. Yep. But now when you say that when they're rubber stamping billions of dollars for out-of-state contractors, what are these contractors like? What are they? What is their job, and why is that money going out of state?
So if you go to one of the executive councils, which is open to the public, they always have the agenda. You can get the information right online, too, here in New Hampshire. But it's about a 24-page agenda. They go by each department. So they'll go through highways, the development, forestry, DHHS, and basically they come forward. For example, they came forward for a pole barn, needed a new roof, and the bid and the contract that was being approved was for $400,000. And I raised my hand and said, how big is this pole barn for it to need a $400,000 roof? And it was only 60 by 30. And I said, this is crazy.
Really?
I just had a barn built that's about the same footprint. And the whole barn itself was $40,000. Yeah. Like, why are we doing almost $500,000 for a new roof? And so you look at who the bid went to. Then you ask, what is the bidding process? And I have them actually quoted as saying, well, the bidding process is not fraud. It's just flawed. So no one's been looking under the covers. No one's been paying attention to who is, you know, where these monies are going from. And you go to one of these meetings, and I kid you not, they line up like their kids going to the cookie jar to get their $40,000, $50,000, $100,000, whatever it is, and walk right out the door. And they may have to answer a question or two. Some of them don't have to answer anything. And you look at the agenda and each line item for this $500 million that they're approving on that particular day, 90% of it is to out-of-state contractors.
And is their system, their bid system, one where they don't necessarily go with the lowest bidder? They could go with the bidder that they feel will provide a better service? Because that's a little bit of a bidding scam. I know that a lot of municipalities will use, they will say, and this actually came up in town during a town meeting a couple years back. A friend of mine had asked, you know, and I won't even say what kind of business he was in, but the town was putting out bids for a pretty good sized town project, and this guy has been, you know, in this town, born here, and he's like, where was this posted for bid? Where did this go out? And the town really didn't have a clear answer for him. And he was a little pissed off because he's like, well, that's what I do for a living. And the bid was given to a company that's like down the southern part of the state, not like somebody right here in the town I live in where I could have bid on it and clearly could have done it for less. You know, and I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but we usually know that when bids go out for a certain amount, there's a little bit of an amount of what we like to call fluff.
You know, the question has been asked. I can't even get an answer to that extent. And you can't even go to, like, the commissioners of each of these departments and get them to provide you, like, even 91A, which is the right to know what is the bidding process. Nobody can respond or answer.
So have you ever thought of doing a FOIA request?
I have, and I think that, you know, there's so many things on my to-do list that's where this podcast and saying everybody can do something. You've got that retired veteran that might have a little time on their hands that, you know, needs to feel purpose, who's righteously angry about what's going on in our country. You know, there's so much room here for people to grab. Low-hanging fruit is what I call it. That would be hugely impactful and lets them know we're watching and we're going to start holding you accountable. I try to make all my action items for my sphere of influence 5 minutes or less. 1, 2, 3, let's all text this legislator at the same time on this topic and let's blow up their phone, you know. Because the reality is I look across at my neighbors and that's who I was before all of this story of mine. I didn't even have time to put the laundry away or clear out the dishwasher. And that's the condition of our troops. So I hear a lot of people in politics say, well, it's because nobody has been doing anything. Well, the reality is everyone is so weary, so overwhelmed, so straight out that unless we are very strategic and give them something very quick and simple that they can grab and go, you're not going to get the engagement you need to flip the tables and bring it back to the people.
You know, I just want to, you know, I don't, I, you know, we're just giving examples of what goes on in New Hampshire. And New Hampshire is unique in many ways. You know, we're one of the original 13 colonies, for starters, okay? But New Hampshire was always super influential with anything, and especially politics. And, you know, and where we're known for having the first in the nation primary, like, we vote first. And the old saying is, how goes New Hampshire goes the country, right? And, you know, and I wasn't really aware of this till recently when I was doing some constitutional classes. Like, there was like 4 or 5 people from New Hampshire that signed the Declaration of Independence, right? So it's really cool. But my point is, you know, we're not just like, I mean, we're giving examples of what we know in New Hampshire because we pay attention to what's going on in New Hampshire, right? But it's not to say that this stuff isn't going on in every state in this union, right? And in some cases, probably on a much higher level, because in New Hampshire, because politics is a contact sport here, a lot of people are paying attention. But even with that, a lot of stuff it's hidden. Mm-hmm. And information is hidden. And results are hidden. And a lot of things are hidden. And it's just, it's really cool, again, just how your story and how it progressed. Because I remember when you were down on that Four Corners with that sign. Like, I can remember that. That actually made, like, social media, like, right off the bat. And I remember seeing that. And that's the first time I ever was acquainted with you and thinking to myself, yeah, I'd really like to talk to her. Because, you know, in the beginning of my show, which started might as well say due to COVID, right? We were looking for examples of people that were willing to stand up against the establishment and say, listen, just because you're telling us we got to do it, like, doesn't mean we're going to do it,
right?
So I didn't mean to interrupt you, so continue. Yeah,
so I get this call to action to run down to this executive council meeting, and I get there, and I mind you, I've been up all night, and what was weird was just the day before, someone said the governor wanted to talk with me about what was going on with healthcare workers. And I had gotten a voicemail back from him. I still have it saved on my phone. And he ended up on my own personal Facebook because I had posted, "Here, Governor, something you can do." And it was an example of legislation a governor in Texas had done. And I tagged him on Facebook. So it's 11 o'clock at night. And thank goodness for healthcare workers who work the third shift, because I had a private chat of healthcare workers who were affected by the mandates. I said, "Guys, the governor's on my Facebook. Please, quick, come help me." And over 300 comments back and forth with the governor until 1 in the morning the night before. I finished my shift. I know this is happening. I wasn't planning to go. I end up going, and I get there, and someone shows me that they're about to approve. They also approve federal money. So, of course, we want our federal tax dollars back.
Now, and this executive council meeting, wasn't this one, this meeting was an important one because there was something in particular that people were thinking that the state wanted to kind of ram through under the radar?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
So there was a group called Rebuild New Hampshire that had read this contract of this federal grant money, and it was $39,000 to create a digital registry of who was and who was not vaccinated.
Okay, that's what it was.
Yeah. And in the grant money, it had three clauses to it, that if you accept this money, you will be obligated to isolate and quarantine anyone the federal government, which was Biden and Harris at the time, deem a health hazard. And this at the same time Australia was having people locked up. And the night before, I had watched someone from Australia actually say, "We were not born with a flag in our hand the way you were in the United States. We don't have 2A. We've always trusted our government. But now we can't leave our homes. If not for yourselves, if not for your country, for the world, please, America, please stand up." And I remember that young man saying that. And I saw that language. And at the same time, I have a family member that was Hungarian Jew, and her whole family died in a Holocaust, and she's an artist, and I have her artwork in our living room. And I read that, and I said, "This sounds, no, this is not okay." And they only let 50 people in. That's what upset everyone, because they're supposed to be public.
Public meeting, open to the public for as many people that want to show up, yes. Right,
and the venue is supposed to accommodate anyone who wants to participate. And so that's where everyone was upset. And they said, "When you get here, let us know. We'll send someone out so you can come in." And I will never forget the person in line in front of me announced herself as a lobbyist for Dartmouth Hitchcock, one of our hospitals. Mm-hmm. And I said, "I'm going to walk into a den of thieves. They all want their hands on this money, mm-hmm. and they don't care that they're going to put us into concentration camps." And I went in, and another individual who's known here in New Hampshire who actually grew up in DCYF care and ended up in residential homes, ended up at the Sununu Center, was abused, didn't get out until he was 32, was in there. He's like, "You're just going to lock us all up in FEMA camps." And he gets very triggered. You know, everyone's like, "You can calm him down, Trace. You can calm him down." And I was like, "Breathe. You know, breathe, let me talk to them." And there was a break between a breakfast meeting and then the actual meeting of the executive council. And I was like, "This is not okay, this language. You know, this is not how we want our money back from the federal government with strings like this attached." And people were asking questions. I said, "I'm a nurse. Like, this isn't safe yet for pregnant people. And, you know, what's going on in Australia? Like, this is New Hampshire. What are we doing?" And they ended up shutting that meeting down and rescheduling it for October 13th. So in that time, everyone petitioned, everyone called, everyone emailed, and we decided we were going to show up in force on October 13th.
And they had to know that that was coming.
They did. Yeah. Yeah. That was very loud on social media.
Well, that, and there was a very, a pretty high number of state troopers that were at that meeting, which normally would not be the case.
Yeah. Right. So October 13th, ahead of time, it was funny, the day before, that same person that I just described to you actually messaged me in Telegram and said, "I don't know, something tells me we need to sit really quiet tomorrow." And I had someone who was jogging saying, you know, something tells me we need to sit really quiet tomorrow. And it was a theme. It was, many of us were feeling that. And so we decided, okay, we're going to go in. We're going to sit quiet as a mouse. We don't want to give them any reason to do anything. If at any point we feel that we're not okay with what they're doing, we can stand and turn our backs to them as a sign of solidarity and letting them know what we, the people, feel about what they're decisioning. And they started talking about vaccinating all the children, and we did. We stood and we turned our backs. And I'll remember there was a man who was crippled with arm braces right in front of me as I turned around, and he was starting to get very fatigued. And at that point, one of the executive counselors was really questioning the contract and some of the money, so kind of like advocating in a fiscally responsible way. So I turned around and sat back down at that point, and the whole crowd turned around and sat back down. And it was a few seconds later, I get tapped on my shoulder, and I look up, and I didn't realize at the time. I look at the pictures now, and it really like makes my heart skip. But there's 5 state troopers. And they told me to come to the back of the room, and I didn't realize the back of the room was actually like a pulled shower curtain wall. Mm-hmm. And behind the curtain, there was like 10 vans and all these like Bronco and police cars and sheriffs and like 50 state troopers. And they said, "You're under arrest. Put your hands behind your back." I'm like, "For what?" "Disorderly conduct. What did I do?" And I just remember they took the bulldog pin off my sweater, and all of a sudden I realized, oh my gosh, I've got my soon-to-be mother-in-law and my 2 little boys that I adopted had just gone outside to go to the planetarium across the way, but they're in car seats. I have to work tonight. And I yelled out, "I'm being arrested." And the crowd at that point was just like, "What is going on? Why?" And there was 9 of us arrested that day as a result.
Yeah, a.k.a. the New Hampshire Nine, right?
Yeah.
And I remember actually watched that video, and I didn't see you. And I'm not just saying this because you're here and we're having a discussion. Like, I didn't see you doing anything disruptive whatsoever. But we do know that the governor probably, I won't say had it out for you, but let's just say some of the things that were being talked about back and forth in comments on Facebook probably would have pissed the governor off, right? I mean, to a degree, and you would be the target for it because you're the one that's voicing your opinion. You're the one that's putting together this grassroots campaign to say, look, what are you trying to do? Where's this money going? What are these mandates all about? We want to know. As the people,
yep,
we not only want to know, but we have a right to know that. Well, no, but wasn't there, Therese, hold on, wasn't there a thing where in the video where the governor was texting on his phone?
Yes.
And then it was just a few minutes after that, they had come up behind you to tap you on your shoulder.
Yes.
To, while you were sitting down, not being disruptive in any way, yeah, to tell you that you were under arrest.
Yes. So the criminal complaint finally came 2 weeks later, and it actually articulated that I recklessly yelled the word amen. As we went through the court, it ended up being a 2-year process, 6 trials. The only evidence they had was that a trooper heard someone utter the word amen, and it came from my direction, and he recognized my voice from Facebook. The video footage from the room never showed anyone even turning their head in my direction. They couldn't say at what point in time I ever even said it. Nonetheless, time warp forward, the night before my trial, the charges were finally dropped. But they came out right in court, the defense, or not the defense attorney, but the prosecutor, that they had a list of people who had been disruptive previously. That
Was you on they that
wanted,
list?
They wanted to use our previous behaviors as justification for arresting us that day. So
yeah, and you wasn't immediately charged either, because I remember that was a deal, right? I mean, they said that it was disorderly conduct, but was you actually charged? I mean, did you have to go and get arraigned like the next day? Okay.
Yes. Yeah. No, I was zip tied, put into a paddy wagon. There was a 70-year-old preschool teacher who had her forehead bashed into the concrete. out back. We were in the paddy wagon together, processed, fingerprinted, sat in a jail cell, had to go to the bathroom with a cinder block half wall with men walking by, a place to wash my hands, which is great as a nurse. You know? The whole thing was completely surreal. And I remember being in the back of the paddy wagon thinking, okay, Lord, even Paul went to jail. Like, I remember watching my little boys lift their arms to heaven as we were singing worship songs before we went into the meeting. And I was grateful that they had been sent out to go across to the planetarium and they didn't actually watch me be arrested. Yeah. But yeah, the whole thing was crazy. And, you know, I'm sure that would shy a lot of your listeners away from wanting to be involved.
I think you'd be surprised.
And you might want to chill. I mean, the whole point was to chill us, right? To get us to sit down and be quiet.
They wanted to show you what they could do. Mm-hmm. They wanted to say, you're going to stand up, even though it's your right to do that. You're going to say things online. You can exercise your First Amendment rights to free speech. But if you say something we don't like, well, then this is what we can do to you. Because they arrested you, right? It was all over the news. It was all over the local television station. I mean, they blew it up.
They did.
And drag you through the crap for however long it took for them to basically come up and say, well, okay, we're just going to drop the charges.
So I had only been dating Kevin for 3 months. He's now my husband.
Great guy, too, by the way.
Great guy. Yeah. But, you know, here I'm. New relationship. Will I ever work again?
He's probably like, oh boy.
Will they take my kids? Will they take my kids and put them back into DCYF care? Like, how far, like, what just happened? And what is going to be the fallout as a result of me taking a stand? And in that moment, you know, where's your faith in the deep waters? You know, at that point, I'm like, Jesus, I am here. I'm going to walk in obedience and I'm trusting you to protect me. And my dad always said, you're never wrong doing the right thing. And you know what? They crucified Christ. So, you know, a lot of people say, well, I'm going to do this because I don't think we have any chance. Okay, well, you know what? That's not how you're supposed to live your life. You're supposed to do what's right because it's what's right, not mm-hmm. because you think you're going to have a positive or negative outcome. And so much of us is conditioned on our behaviors doing what we think the outcome is going to be. We're going to sit silent because we don't want to lose our job. We're not going to put that in our yard because we don't want our neighbors to think that we're fringe, crazy, you know, conspiracy theorist.
Like Therese, like now people are afraid to put nativity scenes in their front yards. Yeah. I mean, that's insane. We used to have a huge nativity display here when my dad was alive, you know, and I mean, but people are actually nervous about doing that. And to me, that is just utterly ridiculous. But this is the world that we're living in now, or I should say the country we're living in now, which we are losing. Right.
Because of the complacency. Yeah. And, you know, when early on, you know, since I have horses, so I'm out in my barn and sometimes things just float through my head and I believe it's the Lord. But, you know, bravery will breed bravery and courage will breed courage. And if you are willing to stand up and put your nativity scene out, guess what? Now all of a sudden the neighbor two doors down who wants to do the same thing now feels safer to do it. Mm-hmm. There is strength and safety in numbers. And as we link arms for liberty, you know, we've all seen the meme where we're all under the table and they're playing the game, right? And it says this all ends when we stand.
Yeah, just stand up.
And the more we can all just link arms together, even if it's in something simple, we have great power. We see that with the Richmond, North of Richmond song. Sure. We've seen that with, what was it, the Bud Light or Budweiser? Yep. Boycott.
Yep.
We can do great things, but we need to understand the condition of our troops. We need to understand that they're scared, they're tired, they're weary, they're overwhelmed, they're stressed. And what do we see on social media? Everyone's talking about the problem. It's like when you're on the highway and there's a car accident and everyone's looking at the car accident, right? As a triage nurse, we need to jump out of our car and stop the bleeding. We need to start doing. And if we don't start doing collectively, we're not going to save this for our babies.
You know, that's the thing I find on social media, and I'm sure you've seen it also, is that, and I've backed way off from it, only because it's kind of disgusts me, to be honest. you see a lot of people posting exactly what you said, the problem. Here's the problem. Here's the problem. Here's the problem. Okay, how about instead of talking about it or complaining about it, why don't you take, even if it's small steps, right? Why don't you just take some small steps and work towards a solution with like-minded people? And this is what you did, and this is what spawned the Resolve movement, right?
Yeah.
So tell the listeners a little bit about Resolve, because that, you know, if you want to talk about a grassroots campaign, that really kind of blew up too.
Yeah, and that was fun. We're going to do it again. So, you know, you look at the Constitution and you look at what our forefathers intended, and I really believe we need finance campaign reform, because money, the love of money is the root of all evil. So even if you have a good legislator that goes in with integrity and principle, it is not long before they are swept out to sea.
Sure.
Right? And so, you know, what do? They spend millions and millions of dollars and billions of dollars on a campaign to do what? Buy your vote. Stuff your mailbox, TV commercials. Well, what if we, the people, decided we're going to figure out who really has character, who is willing to be arrested to stand up for what's true and what's right, who is principled, who really does care about this republic, versus their entire identity has been their political family, right? I mean, so many of these individuals, their entire identity is wrapped up in politics. And so for them, they'll jump from wherever they think they're going to be the most relevant versus, I hate politics. I hate even going to the DMV. But for the love of Jesus, I'm going to step up and make sure that our kids start to be educated with my tax dollars, right? So what if we, the people, collectively became a voting block, identified who we wanted to represent us, and block out the establishment?
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is New Hampshire is very unique that we are first in the nation, but we're also very small. So we're only 1 million people, registered voters at least.
Right.
And if you think about it, if 10 people can go and talk to 10 people and look them in the eye and say, I need you to go find 10 people who want to save this country, you instantly have a voting reach of 1,000 people. If I told you to save your town, to save your school board, to save your property taxes, in the course of the next 3 months, I need you to tell 10 people to come join this group that we are taking it back, could you do that? And I've started, every time I do my debit card, I said, do you think the world's gone bananas? And people are like, oh my gosh, everything's crazy, the cost of living, this and that. And I said, do you know where we're all coming together to take it back? No, I don't. Are you on Fakebook? Yeah, I'm on Fakebook. They laugh. Okay. I hate Fakebook, but since that's where you're at, come find us at We the People NH, and let's start linking arms. The reality I have had is in our little town of Loudoun, we have 4,800 registered voters. Do you know how many people show up for the school budget, which is 70% of our property taxes?
Not many.
We had 100 people show up. And yet that is a, you know, $45 million budget. $22,000 per child that we're paying. And all of their test scores are in the gutter. Why do people not show up for that vote? They didn't know what was happening. They didn't know where it was at, and they didn't know who to vote for. So if I'm going to start doing that diligence, how often do I get a phone call the day of the election saying, T, who is it that we should vote for? Because people haven't had the time. Let's cheat off of each other's paper. Let's do the diligence and then share it with each other. So what we did with the Resolve, we basically said, let's look at the top 30 seats, the governor, the 5 executive council members, and our 24 senators. Can we find 30 righteous people to represent us? And then can we create enough of a voting block in the primary to push them over the line and have them bump out the establishment that's for this global agenda? And we only had 2 months to do it last election. But we made enough of a splash that we upset several positions. We got Barbara Griffin out, who undermined all of our election law integrity proposals in the State House. We got Caroline and Don Bolduc across the finish line. They weren't the establishment picks. So we weren't enough to actually win, but we were enough to make a loud noise. And now we're going to be a year and a half stronger. We now have 160,000 people on average watching the group on a rolling 60 days. We got a lot of people watching. They don't want to become a member because they don't want their name to be on the list of non-compliers.
Yeah, but just disruptors or what the left is trying to deem people like you and people like me as domestic terrorists.
Exactly.
Right.
But every Tuesday, we have it set up that it does a little post on hey, thank you for joining the group kind of thing. And every Tuesday, it grows bigger and bigger and bigger. So that bravery breeds bravery. The courage breeds courage is happening. Every week, every Sunday, it's talk to your biggest church. Ask them to put in the bulletin when the next school board meeting is and at what time. Grab a coffee and just go, even if it's just for 15 minutes. Because they're not used to anyone showing up to those meetings. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we're even showing up or that we're collecting in a place to say 1, 2, 3, go, is making them poop their pants. Because that's never happened before. And so if you can give something small and tangible and you can say, you know what, we're all going to text at the same time or we're all going to do this at the same time until you get the numbers. It started with me by myself and 14 people. What did Jesus do? 12 disciples. Mm-hmm. The Bible says he will take a remnant and he will multiply it out. But the thing is, we've got to stop talking about what the problem is because we all know it by nauseam at this point. There's still people waking up. We still have people getting onto the highway.
I think there's a lot of people, a lot of information is coming out very frequently now. And it's good information, too. It's not what people would deem misinformation or disinformation. Is what the social media companies would like us to believe. And, of course, we know the collusion between the U.S. government and social media platforms, Meta being the biggest one. I think one of the best things to do that happened for free speech was for Elon Musk to purchase X, Twitter, and turn it into X. Because they have a thing there called community notes, which actually polices whether it's disinformation or misinformation. It's not, you don't get fact checked, right? So it's a little bit different setup. But, Facebook and Instagram, which is both Meta, they still have their own way of doing things. So, that's why just me on my pages, because my social media presence isn't huge, but it's not small either. I don't do anything on Facebook. If you go on my Facebook, you're going to find lost and found animals of all kinds of different types. And that's just kind of what I do. I don't get politically vocal on Facebook only because, I am a known person in town and things like that. And I do run a business in town. But, that aside, I mean, I think that's probably going to change. But I'm pretty vocal on Instagram and I'm pretty vocal on X. I was permanently banned from Twitter at one time. Of course, worked my way around that. But now, you don't really have that fear. Not to say you got to be, don't be careful, because there's still people monitoring X from the government, right? And
yeah.
So I understand people's reluctance to want to get involved in certain movements, come out of the shadows and say, okay, here's my name. I'm part of this movement. Because they would be concerned of any type of retaliation down the road. Well, you know what? People that did things against the Nazi regime and against the Gestapo, like, they knew that if they got caught, they were going to be screwed.
Yeah.
So people, you kind of got to get past that mindset, because like Therese says, bravery begets bravery and breeds more bravery, right? And I think, and this is something that other listeners in other states or other countries can kind of just use as an example and hopefully be inspired by it. Because the Resolve movement in New Hampshire that you started in the We the People NH, I mean, it has grown like big time since all these things have happened to you. And you started out small. You went through the ridicule. You even got arrested. and you're still in the game. So
that, I doubled down.
Yeah, yeah, you doubled down.
I did. Big time, I mean, and you know, what choice do I have? You know, what choice do we have? I guess too, as a hospice nurse, you know, I look at my 21-year-old, and that was my yesterday, and I look at my 80-year-old, and that is my tomorrow. So I live my story maybe a lot different than most people because I am a hospice nurse, and I witness what it is like in those final moments, and I know I want my life to count, and I know in those final moments I want to know that I did everything I could. So I have to recognize that I look at life a little bit differently than a lot of people, but I believe the Lord put me, I think everything God orchestrated, even to my red hair, was for such a time as this. We were made for this part of history. And so, you know, when you grab onto that, there's actually nothing more exciting and fulfilling than to know that you're living out your purpose. And so I encourage people all the time, like, this is fun. Like, be full of joy and hope and courage. And, you know, maybe it's because of my faith. I know we're making our way back to the garden. He says, behold, I will make all things new. And I think this time we're going to be smart enough not to eat the apple. And it's going to be good. And so, you know, for now, we're to put on our armor and we are to stand. And we are to do battle against evil. I get really fired up with the church right now. Because Jesus did not sit in a pew. He went into the temple and he flipped the tables. And he was crucified over politics. It was the political scene of his day. And now we have the Church of Revelations who's lukewarm, who is going to sit by and, oh, well, just pray. You can't help what's going to happen. Well, no, Noah knew the flood was coming and he still had to build the ark. He still had to watch people drown, but he still had to build. You know, we still have to do what is right. Everything about us is supposed to be a verb. And so if nothing out of this particular segment, it would be to encourage people, stop talking about the problem. Start finding what you can use, even if it's fake book that we all hate or whatever it is, to start to do something, even if it's at the local level.
Even if it's just in some way a small support position.
Yep.
Like, hey, can you run these flyers over here? Can you take these and go get printed? Can you, you know, whatever.
Probably the biggest thing you can do is say, hey, if you're like-minded and you're for freedom, let's pick a liberty-minded establishment here in our town to go have pizza once a week together and just hang out, because that's mental health. That's good for us, right? We do that here in Loudoun, the Loudoun Patriots. We meet at Beanie's Bar and Grill. Saturday night standing, we have a private chat. Not all of us can go every Saturday, but we put in there, hey, I'm headed out. I'm going to get a draft. I'm going to go get their roast beef or whatever. Hey, I'm going to go too. And before you know it, we've got 10, 15 of us there. But in the group chat, we've now built it up to like 40 people. If those 40 people all go and get 10 people for the next school board vote, guess what? We win our school district back for our kids. How beautiful is that if we do nothing else?
You know, the thing is, too, in the state of New Hampshire, the way that we fund the schools here, that needs a total revamp. You know, how many times do you go to the store and see a wall full of scratch tickets? Or you see the Megabucks machine, Powerball, what's the other one, Mega Millions?
Well, that's a whole racket.
Okay. I remember when I was very young, because my father was friends with the man that made it happen, when they actually legalized gambling on the state level for the state to control it. Of course, New Hampshire controls everything that we consider a vice. They control the lottery, the gambling, and they control the alcohol, the hard liquor, right? Not beer and wine. But and this is, you know, just as a sidebar, you know, this is why I feel as though, you know, there's a problem with marijuana legalization in New Hampshire when it's legal and all around us, like we're surrounded. I think even in Quebec, Canada, it's legal, which is our northern border, right? It's legal in Maine, it's legal in Vermont, it's legal in Massachusetts, but New Hampshire just can't seem to figure it out, right? But the point is when the government, and in my argument and in my opinion, the governor, current governor, figures out a way for either, you know, because, you know, he's not running again. So he's, you know, he doesn't know what he's going to do as far as politics go. But, you know, wouldn't it be just very strange if a member of his family had the license for legal marijuana? I mean, I'm not accusing anybody or anything. I'm just throwing it out there because that has been my thought on it right along. I said, you know what? When that family figures out how they can monopolize it, it will become legal, right? So, anyways, I'll rope myself back in. But
on the note of Governor Sununu, he was running for Senate, and we were able to completely have him throw in the towel on that one. Mm-hmm. Then he wanted to run for president. We had this grassroots army disparage him so much that he threw in the towel on that one. So we have had some fun.
An impact. Yeah. Yeah.
You can do it.
Yeah. So let's fast forward to what's going on in New Hampshire right now.
Sure.
You know, I had a friend of mine, fellow podcaster. Actually, we had what we called a paranormal party up here a few weeks back. And my friend from New York, he had come up with all his ghost hunting gear.
Oh, wow. Kevin would love that.
And we did a little investigation. It was more or less just get together. We'll do an in-studio show. We'll drink a few drinks. We'll eat a little pizza. We'll just see where it goes. And it was a really good time. But the one thing he said to me when he came up here, he goes, oh, is this in a heavy New York accent? Is this Nikki Haley? What, is she from New Hampshire or something? I'm like, no, she's like from one of the Carolinas. He goes, yeah. I see her signs all over the place here. He said, I'm starting to wonder if that's where she was from. He says, you guys are into politics up here. Then I explained to him, yeah, we're into politics up here. And then I explained the whole thing with the Nikki Haley thing.
Yeah.
Because she has really been pushed into the limelight. It's a term we like to use on Wicked Planet. And he is absolutely correct. Like, if you drive down this stretch of road, there's probably no less than 20 Nikki Haley signs here. And wouldn't you know that Governor Sununu, who just before the 2020 election had commercials where he was like, oh, I'm a Trump man through and through. All of a sudden now, when Trump is the front runner in New Hampshire, I want to say Trump is at 45 or 46% in New Hampshire. Haley is the next one down, but I think she's only in the 20% range.
Yeah, well, those numbers really concern me because...
We're going to get into that. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but all of a sudden, and this is a big deal in politics, Sununu, who is our current governor, comes out and formally endorses Nikki Haley. Not Ron DeSantis, Nikki Haley.
Yeah.
Who clearly is a globalist. She's part of the World Economic Forum. She was a UN ambassador. So, I mean, I've never, you know, when she first came on the political scene, I actually thought she was pretty interesting. She was doing some good things for the Carolinas. But, you know, it's just what you said. People can have good intentions when they run. But once they get seduced by Washington, once they get seduced by the money, and whatever else is going on down there, and we aren't even going to get into that craziness that's happening.
I could tell you things.
That's happening down in Washington, just like on the sketchy side. Mm-hmm. I think she was taken in by it all because, you know, people, they enter politics basically broke, and they leave extremely wealthy. Okay, so you're a public servant on, you know, not an overexorbitant salary, but not a little teeny salary either. I mean, you know, it could be $150,000, could be $200,000 a year. How is it that you leave office after one or two terms and you're worth like $10 million, $50 million, $100 million? I mean, come on. Clearly, people are taking money, and I think that's probably what happens with the majority of them. Right? They get seduced by Washington. They get seduced by the party and scene. They get seduced by who knows what other vice, you know, and seduced by the money. And now they become an instrument of the global deep state agenda.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everyone's looking at their political resume. I just had someone that I adore find out she just took $17,000 from a globalist. And because that's the establishment pick, and that's where she will remain most politically relevant by aligning herself with that pick. But now this is someone who was grassroots, that had integrity, that had character, and all of a sudden,
and I was see, a big fan of.
I see $17,000. Now she's going to be beholden, even if later down the road, in her naive, realizes that she took $17,000 from establishment money. How is she going to, without them destroying her
right.
and no longer her whole career, which was very promising?
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Very much
so. Same thing with Don Bolduc. He made it to across the line for the primary. He was promised a big, huge purse from the PAC, millions of dollars to get him past the general. They pulled that out from under him. The only person he had that said, hey, I'll come campaign with you to help you still get the Dem from winning in the general election was Nikki Haley.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew, but that was the only person. So now she's running for president. What does she expect from him? But for him to say, I'm endorsing Nikki Haley. It's such a chess game and a landmine to get the funds and the means to go up against the establishment to actually take a seat. That you end up trapping yourself in the process.
Sure, and that's all by design because I think that they can pick out the potential winners and losers, right? I think they can do that years ahead of the game. And I think, I mean, let's just look at AOC, for example. Like, she had no political career. She had no political knowledge or anything. But they went into her district and they said, you know what? We can make this girl win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and that's what they did. They're selected, right?
They are.
Like they say, they are selected. And, of course, they control the elections, and we're not going to get into the conspiracy theories there, but this is what ends up happening.
So this is where you have to go back to the resolve, and what we were trying to do is let's do our own diligence, because what is the selection? The selection is their marketing. It's the 20 signs that you just talked about, right? They're going to blast you with commercials and mailers and signs and...
How many Nikki Haley mailers have you gotten the last 2 weeks, since, say, last 2 to 3 weeks?
I couldn't even tell you.
So I've gotten about 20.
And you know how much each of those is?
Big bucks.
Millions of dollars of mailers.
Yep.
And you know that money could go to the single mom who can't turn on her heat right now?
Mm-hmm. Or buy groceries.
Or buy groceries.
Or put gas in her car.
It's sick. It's gross. And we as a community, we as a culture are allowing that to happen. You have to understand the person with the most signs and the most commercials is probably the worst person to represent you.
That's your establishment pick.
Right.
Just something I had looked up earlier, and I thought it was kind of interesting.
Our mission statement for We the People is a trusted place where there's no money influencing our recommendations. I am actually now running for executive council, and I've told everyone, I've met with people, we've been planning this out for a year. Teresa, I could have you sit down with these five heavy hitters that hate Sununu, hate the establishment, and could give you tens of thousands of dollars for your campaign. Do you want to meet with them? What are the names? I looked at the list of names. I said, no, thank you. Nope, not doing it. Because I know... if they all of a sudden infused me with $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 to get my name out there for this campaign, they're going to want some of those out-of-state contracts.
Oh, sure.
And I don't want to be there. Well, if the grassroots isn't willing to get me there without money, I don't want to be there because I will not be able to do the job that my forefathers intended for me to do.
Right, but this
and
is the big
problem.
That's
what we have to demand, a change. But then there's no inventory. Nobody wants to lead. Nobody wants to be led. Everyone wants to sit and talk about the problem. We got to be smart. We got to be wise. And it's not that complicated.
Well here, no. And here's the whole problem in why I think the American political process needs a total revamp. I mean, when it was set up by the founding fathers, like, they knew things like this were going to happen. Like, they were smart enough to know that, right?
Yep.
But unless you are an establishment candidate with establishment money backing you up, the odds of you winning, and I'm not talking about your case with the executive council, because I think that you have very good very good opportunity to actually win that when that happens. So we'll talk about that off the air. But in actual politics, if you are not backed by huge money, you are not going to go anywhere. Which brings
why we, the people, need to link arms and start our own voting block, doing our own diligence, doing our own primaries, doing our own debates, coming up with a slate ahead of time, and then knocking it out of the park. That's what our forefathers intended. And now with social media and technology, we can do it with no money.
Yeah.
We just have to connect the dots and all come together in the same spot.
Hence the term grassroots. Well, here's an example. Not only did Nikki Haley just get the endorsement of our governor, Chris Sununu, who the Sununu family, John Sununu, was big-time politician back in the Reagan-Bush era. But the Koch brothers-backed Super PAC endorses Nikki Haley for president. Now, the Koch brothers, we know that they're just another George Soros. They're more to the Republican side, where Soros is more to the Democratic side. But they run this political action committee called the Americans for Prosperity Action. They have just endorsed Nikki Haley, and along with that comes all that money.
Tons of money.
Yep. And you know, something we had talked...
We will never outspend them.
No.
So we shouldn't even try.
Right.
We have to do something different.
Right. It has to be a total revamp. Now, now, just the fact that these political action committees actually exist is a problem.
It is.
It's a huge problem. They shouldn't be... This shouldn't be outside money in campaigns. You know, when you go to do your taxes, like my tax preparer will say, oh, do you want to donate $1 or $2 or whatever it is that goes in the campaign fund pool that the state's supposed to give out? And I'm always like, yeah, whatever. It's $2. But you know, this isn't $2. This is tens of millions of dollars. Now, the Koch brothers, this political action committee, Americans for Prosperity Action, are back in Nikki Haley. New Hampshire's governor's back in Nikki Haley. Now that these people are financially backing Nikki Haley, well, that right there tells you she's the establishment candidate. And even though she's 20 points behind Trump at this moment in New Hampshire, I think it's going to give Trump supporters a false idea that it's already won. Because I don't think it is, because you and I had this discussion.
Yeah.
Actually, I reached out to Therese last week. I knew she was having a bad day. And we won't get into that unless you want to.
You can.
But I knew you were having a bad day, and I hadn't talked to you in a while. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to shoot her a text. Just, if nothing else, just to let her know. I'm thinking about her. You know, don't give up type of thing.
That was a God thing, by the way, because I really needed that.
Yeah, you said that, and that's awesome. So anyways, I mean, you called me. And we ended up talking for about an hour, and it was a really great conversation. But, you know, we kind of, you know, I kind of gave you this, my thoughts on it, which I think you are probably thinking the same thing, right? In New Hampshire, we have probably the highest percentage of registered independent voters, right?
40% of our registered voters
are independent.
Are undeclared.
Myself included. And so this is where Trump's 40, you know, his, you know, whatever, 20 points lead over Haley. I don't think DeSantis is even in the game in New Hampshire, to be honest. And I'm not going to say I'm not a fan of his, because I really liked what he did in Florida. But I think the Democrats have, I think they have a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of talked about this, and I think we're kind of pretty close to being in an agreement here.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just put out a scenario for the listeners that may have not have thought of this angle. We know that Joe Biden is not on the primary ticket for the Democratic side, right?
Yep.
And did you notice, actually, Therese, commercials coming out for this, and I don't even remember his name, this individual now that's running in the New Hampshire primary on a Democratic ticket?
No.
Okay, so all the focus is taken off of Trump, and here's, I mean, excuse me, off of Biden. And I think this is what their plan is. There's a rumor running around. Now, I'm saying it's a rumor because I don't know if it's true or not. It wouldn't surprise me that the Democrats in New Hampshire are telling their voting bloc to go to the primary, redeclare as an independent. No?
I'll tell you. So I think they've already done that. Okay, because they had until October 6th. But the Dems who are politically savvy, which are the ones that participate in primaries, they know that as soon as their last vote, they're to go and realign themselves as undeclared. They do that. They're smart. They're so smart. They're so good at what they do. So they go and they register as a Dem, they pull and they vote Dem in the general, and then right after they go and they re-register themselves as an undeclared voter. That way, because they don't have primaries, they figure out their slate a year in advance. We sit here and kick each other in the head until the last minute and split the vote. So they don't have a need for primaries. So in New Hampshire, where everyone is very politically acute, you have very left going, and they're able, if you're an undeclared voter on January 23rd, first in the nation primary, no point in pulling a Dem ballot. Okay. Biden's not even on it. They're going to pull that Republican ballot. And Sununu even said, if you're a conservative Democrat, I encourage you to vote for Nikki Haley on WMUR this week.
Okay, so that's where I was going with this. Yes. So what their plan is, or what their angle or their game plan, their playbook, is for anybody that would have voted for Biden on a primary ticket. Biden is not on the ticket. So there's really no Democrats to vote for. Use your vote as an undeclared, aka independent voter, to vote for Nikki Haley over Trump.
Yes.
And I think this is what they're doing. And this is why, if you're concerned, if you really want Trump to win the primary in New Hampshire, you need to get off your tail and you need to go vote for him. Because this is the plan. Nikki Haley is now the anointed queen of the Republican Party. We know that the RNC is not backing Trump. I mean, look at everything that they're trying to do. Now, this I don't want this to be a Trump, you know, woe is me conversation. But look at what they just did in Colorado. Like, they convicted him of crimes that he's never been charged with.
Right.
That he's never gone to court with.
Yep.
These four judges decided that, well, because, you know, of everything we're hearing, we're just going to go ahead and say that he's guilty of these crimes. Therefore, we can use the 14th Amendment or a section of the 14th Amendment to remove him from the primary ballot in Colorado, which is a huge state, right?
Yep.
So that's almost the same thing that they want to happen in New Hampshire by telling normal Democrat voters that are undeclared voters to go ahead now and vote for a Republican, Nikki Haley, or even DeSantis, as long as it takes a vote away from Trump.
Well, it even gets more sinister. So last January, as voting members of the Republican Party, we voted for a bylaw to prevent this so that at the primary, if you weren't registered Republican, you didn't get to pull a primary ballot to say who you want to represent as a Republican candidate. And the vote passed as the bylaw, so it should have gone into effect. There's actually a lawsuit being heard this Thursday that Karen Testerman filed against our Secretary of State and Chris Ager, our chairman of the Republican Party, because they failed to actually put that into play.
Okay, so hold on.
Yeah.
Back up.
Yeah.
So this was put into place and voted in, so it should have been law?
As of January, it's up, as far as the Secretary of State goes, it's up to the party, because the party is actually a private entity. The Republican Party in New Hampshire is a private entity. It can discern and decide what its bylaws were. So in the January the January annual meeting, voting members of the Republican Party, which I participated in, voted to have a closed primary, which means if you're undeclared, you can't go January 23rd and pull a Republican ballot. You actually need to be registered as a Republican in order to pull that primary ballot and vote for the Republican candidate, right? If you have a club, should you let someone who never is part of the club discern and decide who your leader is?
Okay, so explain that to me, because I've always been registered as an independent. So what does that mean for a voter like myself?
So if it would
have, that would be voting Republican.
So if it was put into play, you would have needed to pick a party by October 6th. But they did not put it into play.
Okay.
So this year, you'll still be able to do what you've previously done. But us who are tracking to this strategy that our Democrat left-leaning politically astute have in the state of New Hampshire and how they come and pull our ballot, people will say, how do you have a governor who's Republican, but you sent Congress and Senate?
I talk about it all the time on this show.
This is how. This is how it happens. So the Dems pull that Republican ballot in the primary, and they actually will pick the lesser of the potential candidates for the general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a science.
It's a science, and it's a total scam. Mm-hmm. You know, I've said that on my I've said that on this show a million times. We have, you know,
the machine against us is much greater than I ever imagined.
It's huge.
And that's why, you know, I'm supporting Trump. I was part of the Trump campaign. I said every rally people should be leaving with a yard sign and a bumper sticker. We need to normalize the Trump vote. Every fair, we should have had a booth with signs and volunteers. And if you saw Trump everywhere you went, that bravery would breed that bravery, that courage would be that courage, and we would get him over that finish line. But unfortunately, we ended up with some establishment picks running the campaign here in New Hampshire. And even though we're first in the nation, and even though we're small, and the one regret I have is I should have bought the bumper stickers myself and handed them out, we have been blocked from getting the signage out.
All right,
from
so
our
let's.
Own campaign.
I wasn't sure if you wanted to go there because that was actually what initiated my text message to you the other day because something had gone out on social media that apparently was not supposed to go public. It was supposed to be only in your private group. Well, I saw it and I'm like, what the F is this?
Yeah.
Let's get into that because it almost sounds to me like even Trump's own campaign
here in New Hampshire
is trying to derail,
in my opinion, yes,
his campaign. In my opinion too. I watched the video. Yeah. You want to get into that a little bit? And then let us know how'd the rally go in Durham? Was it, you know, because whenever you see it on the news, well, there wasn't many people there, which we know is not the case.
Oh, it was packed. So it holds 7,500 people. They had 7,500 people. I showed up with three cases of yard signs. They were gone in 5 minutes, you know, to New Hampshire residents. Trump draws a crowd. People want to save America. The Richmond crowd, we are loud. We are strong. We all want to save this republic. We do not want to become communist China. There is more of us than there is of them. But they are very, very smart. And if you guys hear nothing else out of this podcast, nothing else whatsoever, it is do not look at the polls, which do not include the undeclared registered voters here in New Hampshire, which is 40% of our voting block, and be overconfident that Trump will win.
Right.
We need to not only go and vote, you need to grab 10 people that may not vote and drag them with you on January 23rd. And you need to get the signs out. And if you don't have a sign, I hate Amazon, but honestly, go to Amazon and for $9, you can get a yard sign. For $4, you can get 10 bumper stickers. For your Christmas, last minute, whatever, Christmas is passed by the time this airs, you need to normalize Trump. I have it on my car. I go to karate. That's a karate mom, and she has Trump on her car. Do you know how many people are like, I love your bumper sticker? people are waiting for someone, and others are like, I'd afraid my car would get keyed. And you know what? Okay, do you want to become communist China?
I don't want where you won't even be allowed to have a car?
Right.
On certain days of the week?
Yeah. Right. You need to get over that fear. Or I don't want to travel to Manchester to get a box of signs for my community because I don't like traveling to the city. Well, you know what? Right now we need to do things we don't like to do.
Yeah, because if we don't do them now, we're going to be forced to do them later. Now, you know, when a lot of people say that that's a stretch, it is not. It is not a stretch that we could be dealing just like communist China. If the World Economic Forum and the UN and the WHO, I just had a gentleman by the name of James Rogowski back on my show. He's a recurring guest. He follows the World Health Organization and their pandemic treaty and these backroom deals and these votes and the lack of transparency. Like, they have the, you said it before, the China model. That's what they want to bring to the United States. They want to get rid of cash. They want to get rid of a lot of the people.
They've got a lot of problems in their house, and how do they fix it?
Well, have you heard of the term? I was just listening to a show with Michael Yon, and he's a kind of an investigative journalist that goes down to the border to see what's going on down there. And I would love to have a chance to, you know, get him on the show and talk to him. But it's called the replacement agenda, where these people coming in from other countries are our replacements. Mm-hmm. Like, that's World Economic Forum right there. And you know, if people, you know, I used to pound on them a lot, and then I kind of got away from it. But I think it's time to revisit old Klaus Schwab and my agenda against him and what they're doing. Because if you don't think that it can happen, you are mistaken. It can happen. It's what my co-host Buckley likes to call the tiptoe to tyranny. The just like Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. Just like every like who Barack Obama was a fan of, Hillary Clinton was a fan of. So you got Clinton, Obama, and Joe Biden. They're all peas in a pod, those ones right there. And they're all colluding right now, because that's who's running this country, is Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Make no mistake about it. Yeah. And this is why they got to pull out the stops and do whatever they can to defeat Trump.
Well, and you know, you have a lot of people that they want to head us to civil war, right? And they want it all to collapse. Why? It's almost like, you know, you're over leveraged.
But that's what the left wants, Therese.
Yes. You're maxed out on your credit cards. You're over leveraged. Everything in your life is a complete shit. And all you have, the only option you have is to refinance your house and cash everything out and try and reset. That's kind of how they're looking at it. The dollar is weak. I mean, the Social Security, everything. They've printed money, inflation. You know, they need to do something dramatic because it's a deck of cards, and it's probably within the next 6 months to a year, some are forecasting, is seriously going to crash. So the best thing you can do is make sure you evaluate your story and what can you do to be less dependent on the government in general. And then we need to find community. A lot of people are like, I've got my bug out bag, I'm lock and loaded, you know, come and get it, whatever. But they're not thinking realistically as far as how will we recover. So it's one thing, you know, to be a prepper, be prepared, or live off the grid and fend for your own family. But the lone wolf never does as well as a pack. And you can already start to identify who the leaders are in your community, who are the people who are like-minded, who are the ones that are resourceful, who have a good work ethic, who have good morals, and start to kind of go back to Little House on the Prairie days, where you come together and, you know, no matter what's on the horizon, we're going to stand in solidarity for the sake of our children. You know, I don't think that there's so many sinister things that evil could do, and evil does not play fair. And so, you know, you can kind of cower in the corner and do nothing right now, or stare at the train wreck, or you can stand up and say, okay, who's in my community that is a mechanic, that's a nurse, that's, you know, an educator, that's owns a farm? What can we do to make sure that we're self-sufficient and we can weather whatever storm comes at us? In the meantime, we have an election that's a month away. And what can we do? We can identify that we don't want to have a false sense because of the polls that are only looking at registered Republicans and not this other bigger block.
And yeah, they're leaving them right out of the equation.
We can get the signs out. We can start making sure we're communicating, talking to people, because they've labeled us as racist, homophobes. He's a dictator. He doesn't care about the Constitution. They've done all this stuff about
talks
Trump.
Like Adolf Hitler.
Right. And, you know, we're combating a narrative that we need to be really loud about. You know, I never understood how the Holocaust could happen. And I think none of us now question.
Oh, yeah. Like we see how that happened.
We can see how it happened. We're being chilled to sit down and be quiet. Yep. And so when you realize, wow, I'm nervous about putting that on my car. I'm nervous about putting that sign out. I want you to do what I do, which is I double down the other direction. There's an old Chinese proverb. My husband's into martial arts, and it's like, when there's fear, you step forward. You know, we need to double down every time we have that little bit of apprehension. And with that, you will go on to the offense. And when you're on the offense, these narcissists, they don't know what to make of you. They see me coming. I have so many establishment individuals saying, Chuck Morse wants to talk with you. Do you know how much crow Chuck Morse must have to eat to have Maya call me and ask to sit down and speak with me? For those that don't know, Chuck Morse was the one that flipped the vote on the money that I was arrested for. Because he was a puppet for Sununu. Mm-hmm. And now he wants to run for governor. And he wants the grassroots to back him. And he is better than Kalia Ayotte, who's even worse. So again, we have no inventory. Where are our John Waynes? You give me one solid John Wayne here, and you get enough of us linking arms, we can put whoever we want up as governor. And we can block out all the noise of the signs and the commercials and the disparaging. But unless we're connected and we're communicating, we can't flip this table over.
Yeah, we're gonna have to work together to do that. And like as a whole, like you say, like another voting block. I mean, like a political action committee. Much as I hate to say it, it's kind of very similar. But yeah, something needs to be done. Don't rest on your laurels, people. If you live in New Hampshire, or whenever the primary comes to your state, because you know primary season's coming up. There's a lot of conspiracy theory and there's a lot of information out there that 2024 is going to be a shit show. And I have to agree that I'm kind of on board for that unless people start linking up, like you say, working together, grassroots, kick the fear out the back door, make your voice be heard. If you don't want your voice to be heard or your name to be known, do a little backdoor support, like help out with the little things. Well, take a little bit of the pressure off the people that are carrying the heavy weight.
Yeah, I mean, basically, you know, I've just been very vocal. Why is everyone not leaving with a yard sign and a bumper sticker? And it got to they don't want me to be down at the office because of it.
You know, let's get into that real quick before we finish up. So let me just... So you go down to Trump headquarters in New Hampshire to pick up lawn signs, bumper stickers, things to hand out at the rally, which was going to be the next day.
I went down Thursday. The rally was Saturday.
Okay. And you were basically turned away as a disruptor?
I was told that I could take the two boxes I had put in the truck, which I've always been able to grab and go, but I couldn't take any more because I had disparaged Stepanek and Trevor on social media. Trevor works for Stepanek, who's the chair of the Trump campaign here in New Hampshire. History with Stepanek is back when I was arrested, there was some righteous John Waynes that went around to all the county Republican committees with a resolution to demand a third-party investigation of the nine of us that were arrested. And Stepanek was chair of the GOP at the time, and he sent out an email to say, don't sign the resolution that you all are voting on for that third-party investigation. Therese is not a Republican. Well, of course, people pulled my voting record and saw that I voted Republican since I turned 18. Mm. But I knew Stepanek did that as an extension of Sununu. Mm-hmm. So here's Stepanek now, the chair of the GOP, or the Trump campaign, and I'm all about Trump. And I go in, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to work with this guy. You know, so let that be that. Knowing that a lot of our legislators are working in a very dysfunctional framework. Okay, so you're never going to find someone who's 100%. Sometimes you got to let the water be under the bridge because we got to fight for our children. So leaving that behind, went in, totally respectful, giving ideas of how we can, you know, really get Trump across the finish line here in New Hampshire. But yeah, you know, after the third or fourth fairground where we didn't have a table or the rally where things didn't go out, I said, either you're a horrible campaign manager, project management, or you're intentionally trying to sabotage New Hampshire. And I'm now inclined to think it's the latter. Mm. So I did say that to him directly. I never said that on social media because I didn't want to harm the campaign. But I did say, you know, I'm about to buy my own bumper stickers to hand out to all of you. We need to normalize this. You need to get Trump out in front of every soccer field, everywhere you go. We need to have people seeing Trump. Because my neighbors, excuse me, my neighbors know who I am. They know my motives are pure. So that one-to-one means a lot more than the noise they made. And honestly, a lot of people aren't watching the news anymore. And we get all wrapped up with that, but people aren't watching the news. They care about what they can trust because we can't trust anything anymore. So you matter because the people who know you, if they see that you're supporting Trump and you want to make America great again, there's no shame in that. They're going to value that so much more than something they've already identified is not trustworthy.
Yeah, you know, it's going to be really interesting how the next month plays out here. Mm-hmm. And hopefully I can get you back in before the primary vote. That would be really good. I'd like to have you come in as frequently as you would like to. Because you're not too far away, which is cool. And you know, we've done several shows together, you know, over Zoom. And that's why I was really wanting to get you in the studio. It's much better. It's a much better setup. To be, you know, to have a really cool conversation, one-on-one conversation. So, Therese, why don't you let the listeners know where they can find you on social media and what was the group? I belong to the group. We the People New Hampshire.
So,
is that a closed group?
No, it's actually public, okay. Intentionally. People question me on that all the time, and I said I want them to see exactly who we are and exactly what we're about because we're on the offense. We're not hiding in the shadows any longer. Mm. So the biggest, we have the website, wethepeoplenh.com. It needs to be updated. There's only so many hours in the day, but it is there. And we have a team that's working on a newsletter for that. So if you're not on social media, the podcast with you, I'm hoping we can do more frequently. Mm-hmm. But the biggest demographic is still on Facebook, which is We the People NH. And then we have subgroups out of that.
So and I'll put all those County. I'll put all those links in the show notes, too.
On X or Twitter, we're at NH Peeps, P-E-E-P-S. So you can find us on we're on Truth, we're on Telegram, we're on Signal, we're on all of them. But I probably don't update all of them like I do the fake book, just because that's where the biggest group is.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I have the same problem. I've got accounts with all of those, and it's mostly Instagram or X that I'm on. Yeah. So Therese Bastarache, thank you so much for taking the time to come in and just giving of us course. A little heads up about what's going on in the state of New Hampshire, which can translate to other states in the country and other countries. So hopefully that's a little bit of an inspiration for a lot of people that are sitting back saying, you know, we know this is going on. What do we do? Well, we just told you what to do. Therese Bastarache, thank you for coming on to Wicked Planet, and we're going to talk to you real soon.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Ron.